Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, April 4th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Washington Governor Jay Inslee says the state has purchased a three-year supply of the abortion drug mifepristone in anticipation of a Texas judge's ruling outlawing it nationwide. WSU asks lawmakers for cost of living raises. Idaho Governor Brad Little must fill two charter school commission seats after one resignation and Senate rejection of Karen Echevarria for the school commission. And Jenny Kostroff of Heart of the Arts gives the 1912 Center annual report to the Moscow City Council. Of details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Washington Governor Jay Inslee announced today the state will purchase a three-year supply of mifepristone for women who seek to terminate pregnancies. The announcement comes as a Trump-appointed federal judge in Texas prepares to release a decision on whether the Food and Drug Administration correctly approved the common abortion medication years ago, a decision that could make the drug illegal in all 50 states. Governor Inslee said he authorized the State Department of Corrections to purchase 30,000 doses of mifepristone last month and send it to health care providers. The Department of Corrections has a license to purchase drugs. The spokesman review reports the purchase cost the state $1.3 million. Inslee said the University of Washington has purchased another 10,000 doses of mifepristone, meaning the state has a four-year supply. Here's Governor Inslee announcing the purchase today.
We know that this is a safe drug. It has been available for over two decades. It has been in customary use, and it has served its purpose to protect the health and a woman's right of choice in the state of Washington. Despite that, there is a real threat that a Trump-appointed judge in Texas could take action which could jeopardize the ability of Washington women to have access to this state, to this safe drug. That decision by a court could effectively end the manufacturing and availability of that drug for manufacturers. So we are not sitting idly by while that threat exists. We recognize in Washington that the price of a woman's freedom of choice is eternal vigilance. And our vigilance has led us to take actions that I will talk about today to maintain access for Washington women to this important drug. So in order to address this emergent attack and access to effective health care, I have directed our State Department of Corrections to purchase a three-year supply of mifepristone. It's about 30,000 doses. The department is able to make this purchase using existing statutory authority. The purchase has been made. The shipment has arrived. It is in our possession. And the department is appropriately maintaining that safe supply. This acquisition of a three-year supply was step one in our effort, but it is only step one. Step two is to authorize the department to distribute this medication to healthcare facilities and healthcare providers. To achieve step two, I've asked our friends in the legislature to authorize this, and we will have Senator Kaiser and Representative Bateman address that issue today moving forward. To be clear, the authority we are seeking today is limited to abortion medication and does not extend to any other type of medication. Washington State will not allow a judge in Texas to deny the right of Washington women to this safe drug. We will not sit idly by. We have to recognize these threats will continue and our actions will continue to preserve the right of choice in the state of Washington.
That was Washington Governor Jay Inslee. Democratic Senator Karen Kaiser of Kent said she has written a bill authorizing the Department of Corrections to distribute the mifepristone, which will head to the Senate Ways and Means Committee in the legislature.
The extremist federal judge that is likely to rule that the FDA process was in error on mifepristone is something that boggles my mind. How these federal judges get to the point where they can rule for the whole nation is beyond me. But we can take creative solutions to deal with this kind of judicial activism. Washingtonians have affirmed at the ballot box a couple of times, and in statute many times, that we believe in reproductive freedom for all in our state. And we're going to make sure that our health care providers have the right tools and the right medications to deal with the residents of our state's needs for reproductive care. And that's what I believe we can ensure with passage of Senate Bill 5768.
That was Senator Karen Kaiser of Kent. Democratic Representative Jessica Bateman of Olympia is sponsoring the bill in the Washington House.
In the 2023 session, we have worked to make sure that doctors can continue to provide safe and legal abortions by protecting providers from facing legal consequences from other states. We've also worked to ensure and keep access to abortion affordable by eliminating copayments or deductible requirements for accessing abortion care. And we've worked to protect healthcare data, which is especially important for reproductive health care, by making violations of the My Health, My Data Act punishable by the Consumer Protection Act. And in Washington, by taking this step today, we will ensure that Washingtonians can continue to access medication for abortion. We know that abortion is health care, and we believe that every person has the right to access abortion, access the full spectrum of the reproductive health choices, and have their own right to their own bodily autonomy. And we know in Washington that healthcare decisions should be made by a patient and their provider, not by a judge in Texas.
And that was Democratic Representative Jessica Bateman of Olympia. Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson had previously filed a lawsuit in federal district court in eastern Washington on behalf of Washington women and women from 17 other states to preserve women's right to choose mifepristone for abortion care. At today's press conference, Ferguson said he had seen continuing new threats to reproductive freedom.
You know, it's been my feeling since the Dobbs decision came out that anti-abortion activists will not be satisfied with that decision. They will stop at nothing until they have removed every last vestige of reproductive freedom for Americans across the country, including individuals who live in states where abortion is safe and legal. And with that in mind, we have filed a lawsuit here to expand access to mifepristone. In a very short summary, mifepristone is one of only a few dozen drugs that have restrictions on its availability. So the FDA has made thousands and thousands of thousands of medications available without restrictions. About 60 have restrictions, like fentanyl, highly dangerous drugs. Viagra has no restrictions. Mifepristone, as noted, safer than Tylenol, has restrictions. Pharmacies have to go through a special certification process, for example, in order to dispense it. It's our view that those restrictions are unlawful and unnecessary, which brings us to our lawsuit that we were in federal court last week. 17 states have joined us. So again, we're seeking to expand access to mifepristone for Washington and those other plaintiff states. Kristen Bineski, who's here, argued that case last week. She's available afterwards if you have questions about that case specifically. But it's an important case, and we felt the hearing went well. And you know, our job, I think all of us collectively have made it clear that, you know, the attacks on reproductive freedom are, you know, there are really not real words to capture it. Those attacks will continue. And so we need to do what we can as leaders of our state to make sure that the people of our state have the full range of reproductive freedoms. That means adding thousands of this medication to make it accessible. That's important. If that means filing a lawsuit against the FDA to expand access, that's important, and we're going to continue taking these actions to make sure that Washingtonians have the health care that they need and that they want and that they deserve.
That was Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson. According to the Spokesman Review, House Minority Leader J.T. Wilcox of Yelm said there is no problem with access in Washington because abortion remains legal in the state. However, Democrats are looking for the state to become a safe haven for those from more repressive states. There is a bill on Idaho Governor Brad Little's desk this week that would make it a felony to help a minor seek an abortion or obtain abortion drugs in another state without parental permission. The bill is also worded so that parental permission is only an affirmative defense once someone is charged rather than an exception to the law in the first place. The bill also has an affirmative defense for rape and incest that only applies if there is a police report. Washington Governor Jay Inslee sent a letter to Governor Little today urging him to veto the bill because, as Inslee put it, the law would have, quote, many unacceptable consequences that cannot be cured. Inslee wrote, among the harmful impacts that this legislation will have, particularly when combined with Idaho's recently passed abortion bans, are the exodus of some healthcare professionals from your state, as well as the certain resulting increased mortality rate of Idahoan women and girls. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family-owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
A bill that would make it illegal for most employers to require employees to get COVID vaccinations in Idaho to protect their workplace from pandemic illness or death passed in the Senate by a so-called veto-proof majority, but did not pass with a veto-proof majority in the House. Governor Brad Little can veto Senate Bill 1130, like he did with a similar bill last year. Besides banning COVID vaccine requirements as a condition of employment, the bill also bans proof of vaccination requirements for admission to a venue, such as was used during the September 2021 Treefort Music Festival in Boise during the peak of the pandemic to keep concert attendees safe from the virus that has killed more than 1 million people in the U.S. and more than 5,000 in Idaho. The 2021 Treefort Festival occurred during the Delta wave when Treasure Valley hospitals were at crisis standards of care. The preface to the bill acknowledges Idaho is an at-will employment state, but then states the bill is intended to apply to at-will employees. If the bill becomes law, the restriction of vaccine requirements would apply to private employers that operate in the state of Idaho and private entertainment venues on private or public land. The bill also states there cannot be a vaccine requirement to receive a government benefit, service, or license, entrance into any public building, use of public transportation, or as a term of employment, quote, provided that such entities that receive Medicare or Medicaid funding shall be exempt from the requirements of this paragraph. The bill also says no state, county, local government, or business entity in Idaho shall provide or offer any different salary, hourly wage, or other ongoing compensation or benefits to an employee based on whether the employee has or has not received a coronavirus vaccination. Republican Senators Ben Adams of Nampa, Chuck Winder of Boise, and Todd Lakey of Nampa sponsored the bill in the Senate, and Republican Representative Brent Crane of Nampa sponsored the bill in the House. Unlike last year's bill, Senate Bill 1130 does not spell out specific penalties for violations, but says the provisions of this chapter may be enforced and injunctive relief may be pursued by either the Attorney General or the prosecuting attorney for the county where a violation occurs if a business entity, state, county, city, or local government entity in Idaho is found to have violated the provisions of this chapter, the Attorney General or prosecuting prosecuting attorney, as applicable, shall be awarded attorney's fees and costs incurred in pursuing the enforcement action. The bill also has an emergency provision which states that businesses operating in Idaho that have vaccine requirements to save lives is an ongoing emergency. The emergency provision means the bill would go into effect as soon as Governor Little signs it into law. Senate Bill 1130 passed 28-7 in the Senate, with all seven Democrats voting against it. The bill passed 43-27 in the House, which is a 61% majority, not enough to override a veto. District 6 Republicans were split in the House vote, with Brandon Mitchell of Moscow voting in favor of Senate Bill 1130 and Lori McCann of Lewiston voting against it. Two men from Middleton, Idaho, died when the small plane they were flying crashed into a hillside in Oxbow, Oregon, Sunday on a flight from Caldwell to Lewiston. The Idaho Statesman reports the deceased were 43-year-old pilot Terry Richards and 24-year-old passenger Caleb Tennant. Baker County, Oregon Sheriff Travis Ash and Lieutenant Ryan Downing told the Idaho Statesman they spotted the airplane that appeared to be in distress at about 9:52 a.m. Sunday. They said the plane crashed into a hillside on a ridge above an Idaho power complex in Hell's Canyon, and when they reached the crash scene, they found no survivors. The Baker County Sheriff's Office posted on Facebook, "Sheriff Ash would like to extend his sincere condolences to the family and friends of Mr. Richards and Mr. Tennant." Heart of the Arts Executive Director Jenny Kostroff gave the annual report on the city-owned 1912 Center at last night's Moscow City Council meeting. Heart of the Arts has a long-term contract with the city to refurbish and run the building. Here's Jenny Kostroff giving her report last night.
We have 12 staff members now. That sounds like such a huge number, but it's just because we now have more to run. And so we have more high school students for the most part running that. They're taking care of the building right now. There's a punk rock show happening up there. So they've got that under control. They're going to keep the windows from exploding. It's excellent. And we have our in-house janitorial as well counted in our 12. And we have a current contract with the city that renews in September of 2031. It sounds so far away, but honestly, it'll sneak up on us real fast. But I just wanted you to be in, keep in mind where we're at. So this year was the year of finishing the second floor. That's right. It's done, people. Woohoo! We have added, for your pleasure, the book room. This is our lovely book room, and it has this incredibly large bookshelf. Now, the book room is important for everyone to know about. All of you can hang out in the book room for free. That's right. You heard it. Free. No charge. Just come hang out. You can do your homework. We have a wonderful woman who does alterations, and she meets people there so that they can go into one of our fine restroom facilities that we built on the second floor and change into their item to get it hemmed. And she meets them there, because then she doesn't have to meet them at her house and they don't have to meet her at her house. So it's a whole thing where everyone feels very safe and well taken care of, and it's in a nice environment. But the big picture is the book room is available to the community because we have a cool partnership. Our partnership is with Moscow Friends of the Library, and they bring all these cool books to the shelf. So if you have books at home you'd like to donate, you take those to the library and you take it to the side door and you say, "Ding dong, I have these lovely books to donate." And they say, "Thank you so much." Then they sort them. Then they bring them to the 1912 Center, and they put some in storage for their larger sales. So these are all used books that you can adopt for your own choice of price. It's amazing. We have a donation box there you can stick money in. Half the money comes to the 1912 Center to continue our renovations and care of the facility, and the other half goes to all the wonderful programs that Friends of the Library does. So it's an ongoing used book sale. It always has new stuff coming, so you want to check that out. So that's the book room that you see there. And we also finished the Barr Family Historic Classroom, recently named the Barr Family Historic Classroom. And that is the home of our pen and primer project. Here are some cute kids. These kids attended, this is Catherine Bonzo's class, actually, fourth graders from the Moscow Charter School. But we had a number of different schools come and experience the pen and primer project. And I didn't know it was called primer, so it's important. It's not primer. It's not what you put underneath paint. It is primer. And a primer is this lovely item that we have created, and I will pass this along for our council to view. If any of you at home would like to see a copy of our fine 1913 primer, just stop on by the 1912 Center. I'll share one with you. The kids get this primer as a part of their day to take home with them at the end of the day, and it has all kinds of cool stuff. So I'll start it here with Haley, so you can take a peek. All of the items in the primer create an entire classroom curriculum for the day. The students get to work with chalk and nib pens, and they get to learn what you would have learned in 1913 as a fourth grader. So it's super cool. Here are some more pictures of them working with their nib pens. They wear the sailor collar to remind them that they are a student in 1913. So they get to experience all of the good stuff that goes with that. So some marching drills. Most kids have never experienced marching. That's something they would have done in 1913. We tell them they're learning calisthenics, and all of them go, "What's calisthenics?" And we're like, "Okay, what do you think is, what do you do at recess?" They're like, "Well, we call it PE." I'm like, "Right, you do PE. Physical education, they all know that one, but they don't know calisthenics. So the collars help them be reminded that they're in 1913. It was a very popular style of the time. In honor of the Navy, they wore their sailor collars. As both women and men would wear them as students, and so it was very perfect for a little quick costume for the kids to wear to remind them that they, too, are in 1913. And then the teachers, these lovely fourth grade teachers, get a day where they don't have to come up with what to teach the kids because we're taking care of it for them. Our teachers stay in character and they teach them arithmetic, writing. They do a little play of the Star Spangled Banner. They do, they work with a poem. They work with Roman numerals. A lot of kids haven't even experienced what a Roman numeral is. That always shocks us too. And so they do some reciting of a poem. I'm trying to think what other fun things they do. The nib pens, they get to write their names into their primers to take home. Let's see, a few things that we did around the building in terms of repairs and maintenance to add to our second floor. So we have the picture I chose isn't necessarily the best one for the actual visual of the bar, but the lighting is up, if you can see it here at the top along here. So this back bar was from what's now Worcester's Pizza downtown, and it was moved into the 1912 Center in January of 2022, or actually it was December of 2021. We moved that bar into the facility and worked around it, and so now it's all installed, but we added the LED lighting in the top, so it lights up the wall. It's a really beautiful addition to the Chin Lu, newly named Green Dragon Game Room. So that's really fun to have that finally back the way it used to be. We also got a wonderful grant from the Avista Foundation to help do the retrofitting of the Great Room lighting. So it is now no longer fluorescent lighting that's dying because it was slowly getting less and less dimmable and more dark in that room. And so now we have LED programmable lighting that can do all the things that the fluorescents can do only better because it really works. And so all of those have been retrofitted and they're doing a great job. Grop Electric did the work for us in that space. So that turned out nice. That was in November. And then we started a new program for the community. This program is sponsored in part by the Lata County Arts Commission, I think they're called. I want to get the name correct, but I don't have it in front of me, which is really dumb of me. I knew I was coming down here, but everyone kept bothering me today. Our new program is called 1912 Center Makes. It is also a free program. This program is for anybody in the community because we think y'all need to get a little more creative in your lives and having all the materials ready for you and you just walk in and do something and you don't have to know anything about it beforehand and you can learn a new skill and or just have a fun evening and not have to clean up your house or craft room to be able to do it. We provide all the supplies. And so we did some weaving in September. We did gel printing in October. We did wreath making in November. This is a couple of the ladies making wreaths in that class. And December, we made paper stars. It's always the third Monday of the month.
And that was Jenny Kostroff, who's the executive director of Heart of the Arts Incorporated, which is contracted with the city to run the city-owned 1912 Center. She gave the annual report for the 1912 Center at last night's Moscow City Council meeting.
Oregon lawmakers could bring more iron and steel manufacturing stateside. Building on requirements to buy from American manufacturers in last year's infrastructure law, Oregon legislation would require iron and steel from the United States for public construction projects. Lauren Bowling with Iron Workers Local 29 in Oregon says the measure will cut down on the amount of imported iron and steel coming into the country.
We really see this as a coalition between labor and environmental groups as we fight for American jobs and a better focus on American and domestic manufacturing.
Opponents of the measure say it will lead to higher costs for public projects. House Bill 3332 has bipartisan sponsors in Salem. It passed out of the House Committee on Business and Labor and is currently in the Ways and Means Committee. Ron Rogers is with United Steelworkers District 12, which covers the Northwest. He says a measure such as House Bill 3332 would have helped local steel facilities on recent projects, such as a highway bypass near Newburgh.
We could have saved a lot of money on transportation costs, and the tax dollars would have stayed in the Oregon economy versus importing steel from out of country where we get no tax dollar benefit from the workers whatsoever. And frankly, it was made a lot cleaner than any processes that you're going to see out of China or other imported steel countries.
Oregon Policy Manager for the Blue-Green Alliance, Ranfis Villatoro, says this legislation complements the infrastructure's law's incentives for buying U.S.-made goods.
By passing Buy America legislation now in Oregon, we're taking advantage of and leveraging historical investments and saying, hey, we as Oregon want to be a leader in manufacturing, and we're going to also leverage our public spending to align with this historical investment to shore up manufacturing.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Washington State University officials requested cost of living wage increases for school employees when they submitted their draft operating budget to the legislature last week. According to the Daily News, WSU State Relations Director Chris Mulick says the cost of living adjustments have always been a priority for the university. Mulick said it's especially a priority now given what we've seen with inflation, given the rather modest increases that we've seen really over the last few years. That's just been by far and away our biggest priority. The university is asking lawmakers to approve a $34.5 million cost of living increase for the next biennium, with 4% raises in 2024 and 3% raises in 2025 for non-represented classified staff. Under the budget, faculty, professional staff, and graduate students would get 2.2% raises in 2024 and 1.6% raises in 2025. Idaho Governor Brad Little has two unexpected vacancies to fill on the Idaho Charter Schools Commission. The Idaho Public Charter Schools Commission oversees 60 of the state's 72 charter schools. One of the charter school commissioners resigned unexpectedly in March. That was Brian Sigliano. He was protesting the commission's decisions to renew charter agreements with the Idaho Virtual Academy and the Boise-based Peace Valley Charter School. And last week, the Idaho Senate rejected Governor Little's nominee for another charter commission post. Longtime Idaho School Boards Association Executive Director Ken Echevarria, the rejection of the nomination was on a 24-11 vote. Critics in the Senate said they wanted a stronger charter school advocate on the commission. There's no timeline for the governor to nominate new Idaho Public Charter School Commission members.
April is National Fair Housing Month, and this marks 55 years since the Federal Fair Housing Act was signed into law. The act gives people an avenue to address discrimination that prevents them from securing housing. Pam Bean with Montana Fair Housing says the law could go further and protect people regardless of where they get their income.
For instance, folks that might be lower income, but their sources of support, such as having food stamps, might be able to be blended in as income and allowing them then to qualify for the housing product they're looking at.
Montana has passed its own housing anti-discrimination rules with the Montana Human Rights Act. Bean says her organization has events planned throughout April to celebrate Fair Housing Month. Montana lawmakers have passed bills this session that target members of the LGBTQ community, including legislation that bans gender-affirming care for youth. Bean says it's disappointing.
It's very hard for me to wake up every day sometimes and think that a state that I love this much and a country I love is putting so much effort into minimizing the rights of people.
Another measure making its way through the Capitol would define sex in a way that prohibits people from bringing claims of sexual orientation or gender identity discrimination in areas such as employment and housing. But Bean notes it's still illegal to discriminate against people based on sexual orientation or gender identity when it comes to housing.
Even though victims of discrimination that are LGBTQ+ may not have state protections, they still have federal protections, and complaints could still be filed at that level.
For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedov.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, partly cloudy tonight, low 26, mostly sunny tomorrow, high 47, and mostly cloudy Wednesday night and Thursday, low 30, high 53. Currently 37 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP.org website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Coming up next, Flashpoints, the Daily Investigative News Magazine. And DJ Jer is on to play music for you at 7:30 p.m. tonight. The Brent Bent Show is on 9:30 to 11. And at 11 o'clock, we will have Intercepted with Jeremy Scahill. So stay tuned for all that information, entertainment, and music throughout your evening here at KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Moscow Ale House, with something for everyone in the family. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739. KRFP is also sponsored by
the Environmental Defense Institute, actively engaged with issues involving the Idaho National Laboratory, a Department of Energy nuclear site. EDI advocates for environmentally sound nuclear policy decisions.